owe them, but very few of us know them. They took an oath to protect us at home and abroad, so the rest of us can live safe and free. They are the men and women of our military and first responder communities, and these are their stories. American Warrior Radio is on the air.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to American Warrior Radio. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. Anyone who's been in a fight, from a scrap in the schoolyard to full-blown combat, knows that our bodies react both psychologically and physically to violence. It is not a pleasant feeling. Now, violence has been with us since the beginning of time. That doesn't make it acceptable, but sometimes it is, unfortunately, necessary. I don't like that, but I believe it. Our guest today is an expert on killing, and I don't simply mean that he's a ninja, that he's been trained. Most of our warrior guests on this show have that quality. No, our guest today is somewhat of a Renaissance man. He is a retired Army officer, Army Ranger, paratrooper, and was a professor of psychology at West Point. He holds 5 patents and has published 4 novels, 2 children's books, and 6 nonfiction books. His book on killing has sold over 500,000 copies and is part of the curriculum at the FBI Academy. He was called upon to train mental health professionals and provide counseling following many of the several school massacres that unfortunately have happened most recently across our country. He has earned a black belt in Hojutsu, the martial arts of the firearm, and has been inducted into the Martial Arts Hall of Fame. Today's chat probably is going to make some of you uncomfortable, and maybe that's a good thing. Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman is the director of the Killology Research Group. Colonel Grossman, welcome to American Warrior Radio.
Hello, Ben. It's my pleasure to be on board, brother. And, you know, to lay the foundation, my book on killing and the research, Ben, the concept is the sheepdog concept that we'll be talking about here. And the thing for most people to understand is that most human beings are not wired for violence. And I make this clear to people right up front. They say, we point to some horrible crime. Oh, that proves we're all killers. No, that's an outlier. Mm-hmm. It's literally 1 in 1,000,000. You explain to me the 99.9% of our citizens who will go a lifetime, never kill anybody or even seriously attempt to. Divorce, infidelity, layoff, traffic accidents, a lifetime of provocation. And less than 1 in 1,000 citizens in a lifetime will even seriously attempt to take a human life. Explain that. Inside most healthy members of our species is a pretty hardwired resistance to killing our own kind. Sociopaths don't have that resistance. Healthy people have to be trained to kill. We found out in World War II, most of the troops wouldn't pull the trigger. It was a training flaw. Again, my book on killing, 500,000 copies sold worldwide, required reading and translated 8 languages. Most of the troops wouldn't pull the trigger. It was a training flaw. We got time to shoot bullseyes. We have no known case of any bullseyes ever attacking our troops. If you've been in the U.S. Armed Forces since the Korean War, I guarantee you never once shot a bullseye. Man-shaped silhouette pops in your field of view, hit the target, target drops. Stimulus response. Like a pilot in a flight simulator, like a kid in a fire drill, modern training makes killing a conditioned response. And oh, by the way, the video games can do the exact same thing to our children.
Yeah, well, I want to get into that a little bit later, Dave. Yeah. Can I call you Dave? Is that okay?
Yes, please.
So let me. That really triggers, as I was thinking about the show today and speaking to my wife, I was raised with guns, and we were taught that they were a tool, just like the chainsaw or the axe or the tractor. They all had a specific purpose as a tool, and we're also taught to respect them and what they could do. I am one of those people, my wife is one of those people, who says if a bad guy comes into our house at night, we would have absolutely no problem dispatching him or her. I hope to never find out. But I know there's a difference between people who say that and people who can do that. And that's a long ways around the barn, Dave. But basically, so I guess a direct answer is, can taking another human life be trained? I'm assuming the answer is yes, but then that doesn't eliminate the psychological effects, correct? It just sort of kicks them down the road.
That's correct, Ben. But I want you to think about something right up front here. Yes, it can be troubling. but it doesn't have to be. For those who fully prepare themselves in a legitimate circumstance with good support structure, in many, even most cases, killing is not that big a deal. Now, there's an aspect here that's really important. You've heard that 22 veterans a day take their life.
Mm-hmm.
But the word veteran is different than combat veteran. The word veteran means everybody who served in the armed forces. In the 40s and the 50s and the 60s, they drafted everybody. Elvis Presley was drafted. Elvis was a veteran. Most of these 22 veterans a day, and one suicide's too many, every life is precious, every veteran's life is precious. But most of these veterans never served in combat. They're the ones who were enlisted, they served 2 years, they got out, they did a great job, they were great Americans, they manned the ramparts, and from that point on, they can proudly claim the term veteran. Most of those 22 suicides a day are 90, 80, 70-year-old men. What we're really looking at is an epidemic of suicide, first worldwide, largely because of sleep deprivation, but second, among our elderly. So the idea that our veterans are all suicidal and homicidal and PTSD-riddled nutcases, when the truth is just the opposite. The Vietnam veteran was spit on, called baby killer. It really did happen. And now they're all victims. They're victims of an evil war. And the thing to realize is a new greatest generation horizon, a small percentage need our help, will be there for them. But the thing to understand is with modern training, killing becomes a conditioned response. With our current modern support structure, for most of our veterans, it's just not that big a deal. My book on killing talks about what we did wrong in Vietnam, individual replacements, the way they were condemned and attacked when they came home. So this idea, you know, I always throw up a headline. I use a document camera, and there's a headline that says 24% of all adult American males are veterans. When you get back to the 90-year-olds, about 90% of adult American males are veterans. It's funny, the 80-year-olds, about 80% were veterans. The 60-year-olds, about 60% were veterans, right around that same area. And so we say, 8% of our prison population is veterans. Well, 24% of adult American males are veterans. So some of our veterans are in prison. We need to be there. Some of them do have PTSD. The majority do not. I keep running into veterans who think there's something wrong with them because there's nothing wrong with them. There is a portion of our veterans that need our help, but the first step is to realize that combat does not destroy everybody. For those who fully prepared themselves, for those who wrap their mind around the issue, it's just not that big a deal. That's one of the reasons why my book on killing has been required reading for the United States Marine Corps for 19 years of war.
Well, I tell you, Dave, you're preacher to the choir here. I am not a fan, and I've always hated the, and I've had numerous guests on the show that talk about this trope of the broken veteran and how everybody who's gone off to war or seen combat is somehow broken, and you know, that's 15 different shows. So let's
a new greatest generation rising up, and that's the key.
So something you said struck me, and let's get into it. We've only got a couple minutes before the first break, Dave. But did you coin the phrase or the word killology? And if so, define that for us.
It is a scholarly study of killing, just as sexology is a scholarly study of sex, or suicidology is a scholarly study of suicide, and not homicide, but lawful killing. The cop, the soldier who has to kill lawfully in line of battle, and how does their body respond? How does their mind respond? What are the psychological impacts and the long-term responses? And that was my first book on killing, but even more important was my second book on combat. If anybody was going to go in harm's way, the one book we want them to read is on combat. But the killing really turns out to be a pretty minor aspect of it. It's the auditory exclusion, the slow motion time, the tunnel vision, the memory gaps, the memory distortions, those are the things that blow people's mind. And when you re-experience the event afterwards, re-experiencing the event is not PTSD. It's normal, but it can become PTSD. You re-experience the event, it scares the daylights out of you, try to not think about it. You will literally drive yourself crazy trying to not think about it. You got to make peace with the memory, separate the memory from the emotions. All of that's outlined in my book on combat.
Interesting. So really the way forward is to embrace it.
Yes.
Interesting. Well, I tell you, Dave,
be the sheep. Those are the survivors.
Well, we're going to take our first break, and let me just sort of tease folks. I can't imagine anyone who's listening to this show, there might be a few, has not heard the sheepdog analogy. But just in case, when we come back, I want you to share that with us, sir. This is your host, Ben Buehler Garcia. We're joined by Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman. We'll be right back. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Buehler Garcia. We're joined by Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman. Colonel, you may not recognize the name, but I am sure you are going to recognize this next portion, segment, idea, concept, whatever you want to call it. Dave, tell us about the sheepdog analogy and that briefly that story and how it relates to our conversation today.
One old veteran had mentioned to me, and I ran with it ever since, and made it famous and worked with it and turned it into books. But most people are not wired for violence. They're sheep. They lead healthy, productive lives. And then there's the wolf. You know, feeding the sheep without mercy. There are wolves in the land. We know this. But then there are the sheepdogs. And the sheepdog has the capacity for violence and a deep love for the sheep, a love for the flock, a desire to use their skills in a righteous battle. And so the dynamic is that really there are no ultimate sheep and there are no ultimate sheepdogs. There's people up and down this path. And we're calling people further up that path. And the more you strip away denial and embrace preparation, the better able you are to survive physically and psychologically. Denial kills us twice. It kills us once physically. You don't have the tools, you don't have the skills, and you die like any other sheep. But even if you survive, you live the rest of your life in hell when there's simple things you could or should have done. Denial kills us twice. Preparation saves us twice. It saves us once physically. You have the tools, you have the skills, and you're triumphant. But even if you fail, you can live with yourself because you did everything you can do. Your conscience is clear. You know, I tell my cops, the kids overseas are fighting and dying, and they ask one thing, watch my six, cover my back. Mm-hmm. Don't let the bastards come kill my kids. Don't let them come hurt my family. I ask my cops, I ask my armed citizens, I say, are there things in this world worse than death? I'll tell you, nobody can disagree. I'll tell you what's worse than death, is stand there and watch your loved ones die and not have the life-saving tools on your body to save their lives. Tell me you wouldn't live the rest of your life in hell.
And I tell you what, it's interesting you say that. I was just doing show prep for a future guest, and he's an A-10 pilot, close air support, and his TED Talks is entitled that, There Are Things Worse Than Death. And but again, that's a future guest. And I want to clarify, because I use the terms warrior and sheepdog very often in the course of American Warrior Radio. And I want to be very clear, when we talk about most of us, myself included, being sheep, that's not a disparaging or a derogatory remark. That's just, it's a term of art, if you will. That's those of us who are not professionally trained, who are not, I mean, we would stand, like you said, along the path. Yeah. We would probably, hopefully, stand up if we needed to, but that's not our job.
And you know, you said if your wife and you both said if somebody comes in your house, they got a surprise coming. These are not the words of a sheep. Yeah, I would say that, you know, for shorthand, we'd say, you know, the sheepdogs are the warriors who are trained. But I would say that we've got to realize that that's kind of imprecise shorthand phrase. The reality is, as people up and down the scale, and you and your bride have come a fair ways up that scale. And so, you know, all of us have to recognize there are things worse than death. And so that's why we carry a gun. That's why we seek training. And the further you come up that path, the better able you are to survive physically and psychologically.
You know,
even if it's just carrying pepper spray or keeping the doors locked, those are steps in the right direction.
You know, it's interesting, and I've talked to my wife about this, because before I ever let her handle any of the weapons, and don't get me started, the first time we went to the range at 21 feet with the 45, her first two shots were in the center X. So I said, okay, go away. You can't come anymore. But the thing my father, who, by the way, is a pastor and a farmer, taught me with guns like any other tool, you know, you never point it at something you don't plan to shoot. You don't shoot something you don't plan to kill. And my first statement to my wife is, look, you have to get okay with the idea that you are willing, and I know there's a big difference between saying and doing, but you're willing at least at this point in time to take a life if necessary. If not, I don't want you getting near the weapon.
And saying is the first step towards
right. Doing.
You understand, there's a big difference between saying and doing, but it's the first step in the process. By articulating that, you've already taken yourself halfway home. You know, one of the things you mentioned, your dad was a pastor. We teach House of Worship security team training, sheepdogseminars.com. We've done over 100 seminars for over a decade before all the horrible mass murders happened, and 26 dead in a church in Texas, 9 dead in a church in Charleston. We've been teaching these. And people say, well, won't God protect you? What do you need to worry about violence in the house of worship? But by the way, more people are murdered in houses of worship every year than schools without a fail. But what we tell people is, won't God protect you from fire? Why do you need that fire extinguisher? Why do you need that fire exit sign? Throw away that fire exit sign. Turn off those fire sprinkler systems. God will protect you. That's not how it works. God gave you the brains and the tools to protect your house of worship from fire. If you don't use those things and people die, don't blame God. And God gave you the brains and tools to protect your house of worship and your loved ones and your business from violence. If you don't use those tools and bad things happen, don't blame God. We have been blessed to live in a nation where we're able to carry the tools to protect our loved ones. And if you fail to do that and bad things happen, don't you blame God? You know, just like that fire exit sign and that fire hydrant and that fire sprinkler and that fire extinguisher, in the same way, those of us prepare for violence in the same way. There's nothing wrong with people
being prepared
for violence.
Yeah.
There's something wrong with the people who think there's something wrong with you.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that, Dave, because I tell you, you have completely blown my show notes out of the water here, and that's okay.
Yeah,
it's just a conversation.
Yeah.
But, you know, I talk regularly to God, thankfully. I think he doesn't talk back very much, and that's okay with me. But when we talk about, you know, your word killology, and just me as an uneducated observer of things around our nation and the increases in violence, I can't help but think that maybe a contributing factor, and I've been around long enough to know that the answer is never exactly clear cut. There are dimensions, there are layers, like an onion, to borrow a phrase from the movie Shrek.
Yes.
But the increase in a sense among too much of our population of victimhood, and of being not able to help themselves, and it's always someone else's job. Do you get a sense as you're going around the country, or as an expert in the industry, if you will, Dave, what is your sense that the extent to which that has impacted our society? I mean, my first week, and we moved to a mining town. I was in third grade. I was in 7 fights my first week there. I lost every single one of them. But that's what happened back then, you know?
Yep.
And well, anyway, I'm rambling now. What is your sense of that?
Once you know, if you reject guns, if you reject violence, which is kind of that left-wing mantra, then you have embraced victimhood. I would say it's kind of a chicken and the egg type dynamic. Does victimhood lead to rejecting violence, or does rejecting violence lead to victimhood? I would say that in more cases, rejecting violence, being told guns are not an option, violence is never the answer, then once you've been told that, if you accept it, then your only option is a lifetime of victimhood. And that victimhood means that the government must protect me. And government becomes our God, self-reliance, self-proficiency. The very concept of the individual citizen being responsible for their own lives or their own safety it goes away as we embrace a model that says government is the answer to all of our problems. So this whole victimhood, in many ways, is not the cause. It is the result of this mindset that says you can't protect yourself, you can't carry these tools, they're evil and bad things will happen, you can't use violence. Violence is never the answer. Yes, it is. There, you know, tell it to Nazi Germany when we stopped them with violence. You know, tell it to the Soviets. I was the Cold War. I was 24 years in the armed forces, manning the ramparts, the Soviets were deterred because we were prepared to visit violence upon them if they attacked us. And so violence is sometimes the answer. And of course, you look at the Armed Citizen page and the NRA magazine every year, every month, and you see all these cases where people are using it. So if you embrace this mantra that violence is never the answer, that guns are evil, then you have embraced victimhood.
And I'll tell you,
and
Dave,
you're in a spiral of in which government is the only answer, and government the only one that have the right to use violence. And that is counterproductive to the way our nation was carved into the DNA of our nation, was the right to self-defense, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The Second Amendment was placed number two for a very good reason. The individual right, and if we embrace that right and we train ourselves and prepare ourselves, we survive physically and psychologically. If we reject the possibility of preparing for violence, it kills us twice. It kills us physically and psychologically, because you truly will live the rest of your life in hell when there's simple things you could and should have done. There are things worse than death. Prepare for those things now, and whatever happens, your conscience is clear.
Well, and I tell you, we're going to depart a little bit there, and that you and I agree on many, many, many things. I don't know necessarily. I mean, even seeing certain, not fictitious violence in film or on TV, but when I see, you know, historic films, it literally gives me a visceral reaction. It turns my stomach. I don't like that. So I don't expect everyone out there to plan on being a Rambo or a ninja. And if that's what you choose not to do, God bless you. It's America. I'll be happy, and I think we'll agree on this, if folks just understand and agree that there is evil in the world. There always has been, there always will be, and we'll need warriors and sheepdogs to stand up to that. Folks, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking with Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman. You can find out more about him and what he does. Visit killology.com, killology.com. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about what's happening in our country and what some of us, most of us, hopefully can do to prepare. Stick around. We'll be right back. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman. His website is killology.com. I'm going to get this right before the end of the show, Dave. KILLOLOGY.com, just like it sounds. He's famous for a number of books. He even holds a number of patents. He travels almost 300 days a year across the country training police departments, speaking of military groups, schools, churches. Dave, I was kind of teasing you about the Bueller part of me always wants to prepare for a show, and my notes are blown out of the water here talking to you, and that's okay. But let's talk about, I talked earlier, a simple Google search will find lots of people out there in the world on the interwebs who disagree with you and your numbers and your theories, and you know what? That's okay. Like I said, it's America. I mentioned that I was raised around guns, weapons. We were trained. They were just a tool like anything else. I also have played a lot of video games that one would consider violent video games. But I don't go out and shoot up schools or post offices or churches. What? And this is one of the theorems that you've gotten a lot of heat for. Is the, I think you had a book called Assassination Generation, Video Games Aggression, and the Psychology of Killing. What, make your argument for us, if you would, Dave, on the connect there.
Right. First, understand that, I presented over 200 universities and colleges, the guest presenter. I train all of our federal agencies. I train cops in all 50 states. I think I'm the only law enforcement trainer in America, post-certified in all 50 states. And within the criminology field of the people in the front lines, within our federal agencies, there is no doubt about this. There's a new factor in the equation. The first thing to understand is these crimes are worldwide. The first lie is, well, it's not happening in all these other nations. Yes, it is. And my book, Assassination Generation, really lays that out. I'd like to send you a copy of the book, and we'll get back on again and work our way through that book, because I think it's a very important subject in so many ways. But, 17 murdered in a high school in Parkland, Florida. an identical crime happened in Erfurt, Germany. A 19-year-old high school dropout, Erfurt, Germany, comes in his high school, murders 17 people, including himself. And nobody knows that. Did they say in the media, oh, identical crime happened in Germany? No. Mm-hmm. The all-time record juvenile mass murder in the school, the Erfurt killer, the Parkland killer, they were 19 years old. Multiple homicides by juveniles in the schools never happened in human history. I briefed the vice president. I was called to the White House in August, gave him a copy of my book, Assassination Generation. I was at the White House. I gave a copy to the president for the president's roundtable on violent video games after the Parkland school massacre. Finland's had three juvenile mass murders in the school. There was one in Taiwan, Thailand, Moscow. Russia is a totalitarian nation that has tried to confiscate every gun for 100 years, and they couldn't prevent a juvenile from coming in the school committing a multiple homicide. The all-time record juvenile mass murder in human history was invented in Germany in 2009. A 17-year-old high school student murders 15 all by himself.
Dave,
so the thing to understand is, number one, this is worldwide, and the media will tell you it's only happened in America. No, it's not. It's not true.
Let me interrupt you just for a second, because I think this will contribute. Because as someone who reads and studies history and was raised, we've talked about there's different factors always at play, and I can't help but think that the breakdown of the family unit in our country also plays a role in this. But I read or heard an interview with you that really struck me, because these shootings are tragic, but even more so, these are kids killing other kids.
Yes.
Right?
It's not right. You know, the vice president honed in on a line out of my book, 5,000 years of human history, 500 years of gunpowder combat, 150 years of repeating firearms. And not one single time in the history of the world has a juvenile come to the school and committed a multiple homicide until a double homicide in the school by a juvenile in Canada in 75, double homicide by a juvenile in the school in America in 79, and then two double homicides by juveniles in the school, one in Finland, one in America in the 80s, and then they began to explode, and they are worldwide. But here's the key point. To understand that it is far worse than it looks, because medical technology is holding down the murder rate. If we had World War II-level medical technology in Afghanistan, we'd have 10 times many dead American troops, and the same thing is true in our streets. If we had Vietnam-level medical technology in Iraq, we would have at least four times many dead American troops, and the same thing is true in our streets. One major medical expert tells me tourniquets, 10 years ago, no cop carried a tourniquet. Today, all cops carry a tourniquet. Mm-hmm. A cop slaps on a tourniquet, he's prevented a murder. You save a life, you're prevented a murder. If just 20 cops a day slap on a tourniquet, half a million cops on duty every day, if 20 cops a day slap on a tourniquet and save a life, we've cut the murder rate in half. The thing to understand is the situation is far, far worse than it looks. And this is one of those, you know, smack yourself on the forehead. You can't deny it. It's so obvious that it's far, far worse than it looks. Every year, the docs are saving lives that just a few months ago they wouldn't have been able to survive to save. So what I tell all these and what they all know, the video game industry hates what I've got to say, but they're like the tobacco industry trying to sell tobacco to children, fighting tooth and nail all the way to the Supreme Court. Again, that's in my book, Assassination Generation, to sell any game to any child at any age, fought all the way to the Supreme Court, and then tried to just absolutely erase any knowledge about that case. And again, it's in my book, Assassination Generation, the Supreme Court, the dissenting opinions, the scholarly research on this stuff. It really is irrefutable. And number one, it is worldwide, which the media has blood on their hands, and they simply censor information that would point the finger back at themselves, the video game industry in particular. Number one, it is worldwide. Number two, it is far worse than it looks.
Dave, my day job, I'm a businessman. I deal a lot with statistics and economics, and numbers are funny things. But one thing I've found true over the course of my nearly 40 years in business is I'm a believer in the free market and the clues that can be taken from our economies and our private enterprise folks. And the fact that there are companies actually building and selling and making a profit manufacturing hardened shelters to install in schools, it it breaks
this
my heart.
Right.
But
this
that's
is not right. And
yeah.
Understand, it is worldwide. You know, how are those gun laws working out in Mexico? You know, how's all that working out? How did that work in, you know, in Germany? The most strictest gun laws in Europe by the most administratively minded people in the Europe, and yet Germany had a crime identical to Parkland, just line by line. They had the worst juvenile mass murder in history, and been in Germany, 15 dead at the hands of a juvenile in the school. The thing to understand, this is worldwide. You know, go to Wikipedia and look at world homicide rates. And look at the list of all the nations. Click rate, click again to get the worst ones on top. And the 10, 20, 30 most violent nations on the planet, with very few exceptions. You got Brazil with limited gun rights. You got South Africa with limited gun rights. But out of the first 30, only one or two have any limited gun rights. How are all the gun laws working out for those other nations there? And when they talk about gun data, they say developed nations. So by limiting who they compare with, they control the data to say whatever you want it to say. Go to Wikipedia and look at all nations, not somebody's choice of, you know, developed nations.
Right.
And get a feel for the real problem. It's very bad. It is worldwide, and it's being held down by medical technology. Around the world, they're making great tourniquets out of bicycle inner tubes and saving lives. Anywhere in the world, cell phones appear, the murder rate takes a dip. Notify that ambulance automatically. Get them there in that golden hour. Save those lives. The situation is far, far worse than it looks. And that's really the key point that we take away from this this quarter of the presentation, if you will. And understand that all the old problems are still there. You know, during and after the American Civil War, we had more broken families and one-parent families we've ever had, percentage-wise. There have always been gangs. There have always been drugs. But the analogy I use is to cancer and heart disease. Smoking causes heart disease. You can't deny it. But so does genetics and exercise and diet and dozens of other factors. Many things cause violent crime. But something fundamentally new in human history is happening. What is the new factor? The guns are not new. The guns didn't change. We changed. Mm-hmm. High-capacity semi-automatic military weapons, M1 carbines, hundreds of thousands of M1 carbines flooded America under World War II. They were junk. You could get them for scrap prices. Hundreds of thousands of M1 carbines flooded America under World War II. Semi-automatic 20, 30-round magazine. The guns didn't change. Double-stacked, high-capacity 9mm pistol, Browning High Power, came out in 1935. The official sidearm, many nations in World War II. Again, thousands. They were scrap after World War II. They were the official sidearm of many nations. Nations downsided, and Browning High Powers flooded the market after World War II. The guns didn't change. We changed. Our children changed. And it is worldwide. And that is the information they don't want us to know, and they don't want us to ask the question, what is new? What is the new factor? Tobacco, added all the other factors, creates much more heart disease. Take tobacco away, you reduce the risk of heart disease greatly. Not every kid that doesn't have a seatbelt buckle died. When I was a kid, when you were a kid, we never buckled our seatbelt. We're just fine.
Yeah, David,
not every kid that plays these games becomes a killer.
And that's a good transition to our last segment. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're joined by Lieutenant Colonel Dave Gross. When we come back, we're going to talk about what some of us can do to prepare. We'll be right back. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're joined by Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman. His website is killology.com, killology.com. He's one of our nation's foremost experts on the psychology of killing, violent killing. And again, we want to clarify this is justified killing. And I think, Dave, you said earlier when we talk about the sheepdog reference, it's, you know, the sheepdogs are out there looking for righteous battle, the opportunity to use their skills and their attitudes to protect the rest of us. And I think that's important to emphasize. I tell you, Dave, I was talking with my producer here on the commercial break. We're both sons of preachers, and we said, boy, Dave would make a great Baptist preacher, boy. He just goes, so I'm going to ask you a favor. Oh, you are a Baptist preacher.
Yep. I'm not ordained, but I'm licensed, and I've been able to man the pulpit on many occasions.
Okay, so
here's, you know, my next book coming out next spring is on spiritual combat.
Okay.
We'll take the whole dynamic. My most recent book came out in January of this year. It was A Bulletproof Marriage, a 90-day devotional. It's the first one of my books that's really been overtly Christian. All of my books have had that foundation to them. But Bulletproof Marriage, 90-day devotional, Sheepdog and Spouse, anybody who's even remotely walking the sheepdog path, along with the book, A Bulletproof Marriage, You and Your Spouse, 5 minutes a day for 90 days, just rock your world. And then On Spiritual Combat coming out in the spring, and it's going to be a big thing. But, you know, let's take this final hour and talk about what we can do to better prepare.
Let's do that. Yeah. Let me ask you a favor if I can, and I'll use a double entendre here, both from the sheepdog reference and the Baptist preacher reference. As a member of the flock, a sheep myself, let me ask you a favor, because we really only have a little bit of time, and there's a couple things I really want to get out of the way. So let's do a little bit of rapid fire here, if you don't mind, sir. One of the things that's always struck me, and in particularly in prepping for this show, and you speak to a lot of law enforcement officers and groups. If you can briefly describe me the distinction between, I joined the military. I'm trained to take a life, and frankly, I probably expect to have to do so at some point in time. However, our law enforcement officers, their goal is to save lives. And I'm thinking that creates a psychological challenge or disconnect, in that I'm out there trying to save lives, but as we've talked about and emphasized, you know, throughout the show, sometimes violence, unfortunately, is the answer, and these law enforcement officers may have to take a life. Explain to us what you would say to someone like that to help them wrap their mind around that after the fact.
You know, what I tell everybody is, you know, this is debate between warrior and guardian, and the model for law enforcement. I'm going to draw from both sides. Extremism in any direction should concern us. One of the places where the guardian folks, and you can't take that military model too far with law enforcement. Our goal, I'm a cop, I'm a reserve cop, academy graduated reserve cop, and our goal is never to kill. We're always trying to save lives. We are shooting because there is immediate threat, a life, limb, or grievous bodily harm, self or others. The moment that person is no longer a threat, we'll jump on the body, we'll slap on a tourniquet, we'll call the ambulance, we'll provide CPR. Once they're no longer a threat, their life is as precious as any other life on the planet. And I tell my cops, our strength comes with that. Our purity comes with that. Never lose track of that. I can give you case after case where very tense situations in front of family, in front of community members, a cop had to use deadly force, and the situation's completely defused when the cop jumps on the body and tries to save that life. But as a result of what we do, there are times when lives will be lost. And we've got to accept that is the price of providing law and order in our society.
And I tell you
until
what, sir,
the time comes when you know, tasers become tasers are a major step forward. If it weren't for tasers, cops would be in a lot more cops that die, a lot more bad guys that have to be shot. Pepper spray. Think of all the less lethal things that we have out there. If it weren't for those, the numbers would be much greater.
And I tell you, in my hometown, sir, we've got a perfect example of that. I've had him on the show before. I don't know if you are familiar with Dr. Richard Carmona. He was a Green Beret medic in Vietnam, sheriff, SWAT team member. He was a
Surgeon General.
Yeah, Surgeon General. He was involved in a situation where, unfortunately, he had to shoot a bad guy on the streets of Tucson, and immediately then went over and started to treat him and save his life.
Yes.
And that dichotomy is just a fabulous. So let me get back to the psychology a little bit, because I know we're down to about 5 minutes. What other than mental preparation are there just some basic logistical things? What can the rest of us? What can we sheep do?
Yep. And again, in just 5 minutes, the most important thing is give every audience. It comes out of nowhere. We are in the middle of a worldwide epidemic of sleep deprivation. In the military, a sleep-deprived soldier is 5 times more likely to take their life. In the military, in the active duty military, our suicides have nothing to do with combat. A non-combat vet is as likely to take life as a combat vet. But a sleep-deprived person can be up to 5 times more likely to take their life. We're in the middle of a worldwide epidemic of sleep deprivation. Cell phones, incredibly addictive video games, the cell phone addiction, the social media addiction, the incredibly addictive video games. One of the major manifestations of all of this is worldwide epidemic of sleep deprivation. Now, sleep deprivation creates impaired judgment. 18 hours without sleep, your impaired judgment equal to 0.08 legally drunk. 24 hours without sleep, you're 0.10 above legally drunk. 2 nights without sleep, and you are psychotic. Any graduate of Army Ranger School will tell you about hallucinations on the third day without sleep. And so what I tell all my cops, I tell my audiences, when you send your kid to bed at night, take their cell phone away from them. No laptop in the room, no cell phone in the room. They got to go to the room and sleep. A cop told me, he said I had a good girl. He said she was an A student. She said, Dad, it's embarrassing. You don't have to take my phone every night. You can trust me. So he said, so I trusted her. Let her keep her phone. A little while later, my little girl took her life.
Oh, no.
He said she took her life. And we never knew the hell she was living in until we looked at the text messages on her cell phone.
Mm.
Night after night of ceaseless, relentless, vicious bullying. And I knew my little girl was bullied to death. She was tormented to death. I didn't understand. She was sleep deprived and tortured and tormented to death. And the one thing on earth I could have done for her was take her cell phone every night, let her turn off all the bad stuff in this world. Yet the opiate epidemic. Sleep deprivation creates chronic pain. Worldwide, the prescription opiates have always been there. What is the new factor? Sleep deprivation creates chronic pain. Doc, I heard all the time, give me a pill to fix it. Three major killers for our kids have all exploded. Suicide, traffic deaths. The greatest predictor of traffic deaths are sleep deprivation and alcohol.
Hmm.
A sleep deprived kid behind the wheel is just like a drunk kid behind the wheel. And it's killing our children. The suicides have exploded. Teen suicides, tweenagers, they call them tweenagers. 10, 11, 12-year-old teenage girls' suicide rate in America has tripled per capita in just the last decade.
Okay, so
this sleep deprivation is a new factor. It is a critical new factor in explosion of suicides, traffic deaths, and drug overdoses, the three major killers of our kids.
What else?
It is the one thing we can start doing right now. Teach your children to sleep in a dark room. The older we get, the less melatonin the body produces, and we've got to sleep in the dark. Teach yourself to sleep with a sleep mask on. We're issuing sleep masks in the armed forces by the fistfuls. You look like the Lone Ranger without the eye holes. It is one wellness tool that we're just giving to everybody across the armed forces, are the sleep masks. So you can truly create a truly dark room to sleep in and get quality sleep. Teach your kids to sleep in the dark. You need to sleep in the dark. You need to get enough sleep. That the video games are so addictive. Don't let them get in the way. 15% of all divorces in America, video games are the cause. You know, the old timers who talk about video games, think about Tetris on steroids. We're cracked. And every generation gets more addictive.
Well, we're maybe from that same generation. When I came from, Dave, you had to actually go out somewhere to find a video game to play it. So I get that. So I tell you, sir, we're really running out of time. I just want to read something for our listeners here, because I think this is one of the best compliments you've ever been given. It's from an article. It talks about in October 2016, you were giving a presentation to the California Highway Patrol, and there was a trooper by the name of Andra Eddy, and she mentioned that her husband, who was also a trooper, unfortunately had to engage a car thief and shoot him and ended up taking that bad guy's life. And she told you, Dave, if he had not read your book, he would have thought that something was wrong with him. And because he read your book, he is healthy, still a contributing member of our society, and hopefully still a law enforcement officer. So just from me to you, thank you for that. And keep doing what you're doing out there, sir.
You too, Ben. God bless you, brother, and God bless America.
Okay, and so now you get short. Killology.com, folks can read more. What do you have? You mentioned your most recent book on marriage. Is there anything else our listeners should look for coming out soon? What have you got planned?
Well, On Spiritual Combat, coming out in the spring, is going to be a very big deal, a very powerful resource. A Bulletproof Marriage, 90-Day Devotional, came out this year. And, of course, my mainstream book, Assassination Generation, terribly important. There are things in there, the Supreme Court decision, the battle against the video game industry, the battle against this industry who's fought tooth and nail, decade after decade, to provide, sell any game to any child at any age. Assassination Generation, just essential to understand the battle that lies at the heart of our civilization right now, and just stay strong and just take a few steps up that path. We don't have to be sheep. We can make the decision to protect our meadow, to protect our flock. If somebody comes in my meadow, my house, they got a surprise coming to them. And take a few steps up that path and praise God every day. We live in a nation where we have the right and we have the ability to protect ourselves, and we have the magnificent men and women in our military and our law enforcement who put it on the line every day to preserve those freedoms for us. God bless them all as we come into this Christmas season, and praise God.
Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman, thank you so much. Folks, this podcast and others can be found at AmericanWarriorRadio.com. Follow us on Facebook. We've got a Twitter feed at Warrior Radio TUC. If you support what we're doing, visit Patreon.com/AmericanWarriorRadio. For less than one cup of coffee a month, you can support this programming. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, take care.
You've been listening to American Warrior Radio. You can hear over 150 episodes of this program at AmericanWarriorRadio.com.